everybody. Welcome to another episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. My name is Brian Hitney. I'm a technical evangelist here at Microsoft, and I'm sitting in the lovely Microsoft Charlotte office, as you can see from the background behind me. Sitting to my right or left is, from halfway around the world, is Mr. Phil Lee. Phil, hi there. I see you've got a nicer picture behind you than I do. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, a little bit about that picture behind you, and what you do.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I'm Phil Lee, and I'm way down in Wellington, New Zealand. And it is freezing cold and raining outside. So just imagine that I'm actually in that picture, which is taken in Machu Picchu in Cusco, Peru. Which is one of sort of my favorite places to visit. I'm a .NET developer. I have been for the past 7 or 8 years now, primarily focusing on web technologies. Done a little bit of, you know, Windows Forms and whatnot, but yeah, I guess through just the job, the projects I've been involved on and so on, it's always been web, and that's kind of where my passion lies.
Seeing the competition that came up, and I saw it advertised sort of on Scott Hanselman's blog, seemed like a good way to
put a lot of the skills sort of that I've learned over the years into practice and try and build something that was useful and that could actually serve as a good example to others.
Yeah, so why don't we take a step back and first tell me a little bit about what the Windows Azure Developer Challenge was, and then we'll get into the solution you came up with, and we could even talk about Scott's post. But why don't you tell me a little bit about the challenge and why you decided to get involved?
Okay, so the challenge was run by Code Project Windows Azure Developer Challenge, and it ran for about 2 months or so, and it involved 5 separate stages. So it was basically taking advantage of as many of the Azure features as you could to build an application of your choice. And so I guess, I don't know about you, but I find that myself and most of the other devs I know, the hard part isn't necessarily actually the building of the app sometimes, it's actually coming up with the idea. And so for me, it was a matter of, I saw the competition, I thought that'd be great, but then I was like, what am I going to build? And then Scott Hanselman had a post about the .NET Conf site, which was basically powering, allowing them to run a virtual conference online. So I saw that and I thought, at the moment it was just restricted to them hosting the conference, but what if somebody else wanted to host their own conference and run it online? And have, people around the world viewing it live. And so that was kind of where I got the idea. And I emailed, I put a post on Scott's blog and asked, is it okay if I go ahead with this? And he said, sure. So away I went. So I was going to say, the challenge itself involved 5 stages. So yeah, websites, SQL, Azure, what was the third stage?
Mobile,
first stage was just the idea, actually. Then websites, SQL, Azure, VMs, and then mobile as well. And so I had an entry in each of those. It was sort of focused on that specific part of the challenge.
Yeah, and it's such a great idea, too. And we'll since people might be watching this, have no idea what the solution is. So we'll get to that in just a second. But one of the biggest challenges, and I've got that, I'm at events every week, and the hardest thing is coming up with people always want to know, can we watch this remotely, how do you do that? And there just historically has never been a really good solution for that. Part of it is the equipment that's necessary to do it, but really the bigger issue oftentimes is having the infrastructure to support it. So can you store videos and can you have everything hosted in online, and the cloud seems like a perfect way to do that. So the solution makes a lot of sense. And so your entry here is called UConf. And so you want to walk through this project a little bit. We can get into some demos as well, but from a high level, is there an overview you'd like to give about the solution?
Sure, yes. So it's basically, it uses Azure to host the UConf website, and then it offloads all of the video, so the video streaming and the recording into Google Hangouts, mm-hmm. which allows you to basically record and stream in real time to the world, to anyone who connects up to that Hangout. So as a result, the actual load on the site itself, because obviously video processing that, yeah, it's hard and it requires a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. So by offloading that to Google Hangouts, all the UConf site takes care of is making sure that people can create their conferences and kind of manage them. So mm-hmm. add their presenters, say what they're talking about, and then send out links to that URL, et cetera, you know, so people know when the conference is on, what it's about, and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And, you know, I can see it expanding to do things like, you know, calendar notifications and sharing and all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's sort of standard similar conference platform, except that it, yeah, it allows that sort of that live streaming and yeah, conference management.
Okay. And roughly how much time did it take you, once you had this idea, to go through each one of these individual challenges within within the project?
Yeah, well, that was tricky because I, at the moment, so a bit of background for kind of how I found time to get into the conference in the challenges in the first place. So, you know, I've had a number of health issues this year with my back and whatnot, which has meant I haven't been able to work. And so as a result, I've been off work. But I'm still, you know, I wanted to sort of keep my skills up to date and fresh. And so this was kind of ideal because it allowed me to spend as much or as little time as I wanted. So I spent, it was one of those ones where I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to do, you know, during the day and doing something else. I'm sort of, you find yourself getting sucked into it. So all day I'm kind of thinking about it. But then in terms of the actual coding and write-up, it was probably, I don't know, say a couple of hours a day, every day, right through. Mm-hmm. But like I say, you know, I found it's, I think back when I was at university years ago, when you've got a big assignment, you know, you're always kind of, it's always in the back of your mind, even if you're mm-hmm. not working on it. So I might be out on a Saturday doing something and yet I'm still thinking, oh yeah, I remember how I did that. So when I came to do the write-up and do the actual code, I kind of was pretty clear on where I wanted to go.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think you wanted to show a couple of demos in Visual Studio. Before we get there, you know, I focus a lot on Windows Azure, and so I know, at least I'd like to think I do, I know the platform pretty well. Was there anything surprising to you that stood out as either more difficult or easier than you thought, or was there any one technology that that really stood out to you as something that you enjoyed working with or you found particularly challenging?
Okay, so I'll probably start with the most challenging bit, which would have been for part four, which was around VMs. So I, if you see the article, I used an Apache Solr VM to do the search, which uses Lucene in the background. And that runs on Linux. And so I haven't done any Linux for a long time. And initially, the automated setup was very easy because there was already a VM for it. But then later on, I wanted to secure it so that only basically I or the one of my web roles could connect up to it to add items to the search index, etc. But I couldn't figure out, and I tried so many ways to do it, and I looked the documentation and whatnot, but I just couldn't do it. It was probably the hardest bit because that was one of the few where, you know, I had something that I really wanted to achieve and I actually didn't achieve it. In terms of the highlights, yeah, there were a lot of highlights. First off would have been just the ease of setting up almost anything using the Azure Management Portal, websites, databases, queues, etc. You know, it's almost point click for a lot of it, and it's really, you know, you can get up and running really fast. Second would have been the automated source control integration. So I used GitHub, but you can also use, for Azure websites, you can use GitHub, Bitbucket, TFS, mm-hmm. And for the cloud services, which is what I used for my work background worker role, you can use you can use TFS as well. And so just the speed at which, again, you know, via the management portal, you just enter your TFS or your Git URL and then configure it to allow Azure to pull your source and build it and deploy it, is it's quite amazing. You know, as someone who hadn't done that before and seeing I can do a check-in and within, well, sometimes sort of 2 minutes, that's deployed out. It's quite, yeah, it's quite quite amazing and really nice to see. I guess, yeah, SQL Azure, that was actually quite good too. So being able to just have a database and auto have that automatically updated with Entity Framework Code First migrations, that was, yeah, really easy. The database, it never went offline. I never seemed to have any connection issues. You know, it's always up and it gets all there automatically backed up and whatnot. So from a, I guess from that peace of mind point of view for me as well, it was quite good knowing that it was there and that it was being looked after, and that in the event that somehow one instance catastrophically failed, that I knew it would be there. You know, and for obviously for a smaller app like this that I'm, you know, it's just me, that maybe that's not so much of an issue. But if I was building something, you know, for a client, that actually becomes quite important. And so just having that peace of mind, knowing it's a solid foundation to build on, is really good too.
Mm-hmm. Now, the mobile component, what's interesting about this now is you had to integrate a mobile component into this, but you didn't use my favorite technology, Windows Azure Mobile Services, but I know that you did mention reading up on it, so I'm curious what your thought process was, not that you should or shouldn't have used it, but just what your research on it showed, or what you approached in developing the mobile part of the app.
Okay. Well, so I kind of looked at, I mean, I didn't really look too hard, to be honest. I have subsequently actually looked at mobile services, but at the time it was more around trying to looking at using three options. One was to use responsive design on the existing website. One was to build a specific mobile app for, you know, Windows Phone, Android, iPhone, whatever. The other was to build a separate mobile website. Now, for those second two, so that's building a separate mobile app or a mobile version of the site, I could have used mobile services because that provides, again, out of the box, things like authentication and easy access to your tables and whatnot. But I was I was very time constrained. And so part of it was I had an existing website, and it was like, well, for me, there'd be quite a steep learning curve to get into either any custom Windows Phone or Android development, or to do a separate mobile site with a mobile service. Mm-hmm. But I kind of had a bit of an idea about responsive web design anyway from what I'd read previously. And then also it was a matter of just exposing it to as wide an audience as possible. So, you know, if there's something that's usable in the browser, then you can view it on your desktop or your mobile, you know, any range of mobiles or whatever. So that was also a driver for using just responsive web design with the existing site. So I have played with mobile services and I found them really easy to get up and running with subsequently. But at the time it was like, oh, it's a bit of an unknown, so maybe I'll stay away from it for now.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the nice thing about the way mobile services works is it would be it'd be possible to piece in features in the future. For example, if you want to start taking advantage of the authentication pieces in there to more easily, say, authenticate users, whether it be their Google account or Microsoft account or Twitter, Facebook, you could shim that piece in or just use it for notifications. If you want to send down notifications to users cross-platform, you could use that piece of it. You know, so there's a lot of potential there for additional, you know, for adding in mobile services support, which is pretty cool. So now, do you want to show some of this in Visual Studio and walk through some of the solution?
Yes, I'd love to. Right, so what I've done is I've opened the article on Code Project, and I've scrolled down to the architectural overview section, which is like a high-level diagram of the solution as it was at the end of the final challenge, because it obviously evolved from initially just being a website and then became a lot more with SQL and a VM and whatnot. So if I just show you, so here's here's the user, and the user is going to connect up to the UConf website, which is up here, and that sits within the Azure cloud. So all these items within the cloud are managed by Azure. So first up, I have the UConf website, and that's an MVC4 web application. It uses MC Framework 5 with Code First for database access. It uses Elmar for error logging. And so if I show you, so first up, so my error log data, I'll show you that. So that all goes into Azure Table Storage, again, which is reliable storage managed, yeah, not SQL, obviously, managed by Windows Azure. So all my error logs go in there. At the end of Challenge 2, when that was before I started using SQL, I was actually pushing all the conference data into there as well. But then because I wanted to learn more about Entity Framework Code First and also take advantage of SQL Azure, I decided that as of Challenge 3, which was the SQL part, I'd store it in SQL. So as you can see here, there's the SQL Azure. So all the domain data, conference data, membership data, etc., gets stored in there. In Challenge 4, what I wanted to do, so initially, when you've got when you fire up an MVC4 web application using the web application template, it automatically helps you out with membership and whatnot, and you can add in things like password reset emails if you like, or welcome emails. Now, sending email offline, or sending email is one of those tasks that really should be performed offline. And as with, you know, when you've got a website, if there are any tasks you can perform out of process, you improve the reliability and the speed of your website. So I thought, well, I'll try and send them from a worker role, which also let me take advantage of Azure worker roles, which are like background workers. They don't have any web interface to them, but you can do things like, yeah, sending emails or doing batch updates or any kind of offline processing you want to have performed. So I have one of those, which sends emails and also updates my search index, which I'll get to in a second. In order to pass data to that, I used Azure Service Bus queues. So the website puts these little messages on the queue, for example, saying, I don't know, this conference has been updated, or it might say, send an email to joebloggs@live.com with this content. But it just tells the worker role to perform that task, puts that message on the queue, the worker role pulls that off, and then that actually performs the task. So in one case, it sends the email using SendGrid. And in another case, when conference data gets updated, it needs to update the search index, which is a VM, an Azure VM, which is running Apache Solr. So it needs to connect to that and pass the conference data into it. So it pulls that message off the queue, passes the data across, and away you go. And that's kind of it. So in terms of the user would connect either up to the website, or if they're doing searches, they actually connect directly to the Apache Solr VM. Okay, and so to show you how I built it, I'll jump across into Visual Studio. This is Visual Studio 2012 that I'm using. And the website is a MVC4 internet application, or website built off the internet application template that comes with Visual Studio. And like I say, it uses Entity Framework Code First with migrations for data access, Elmar for error logging, Razor Views, uses SignalR as well to do, so an interesting component of this. And this is something that Scott Hanselman already talked about in his blog post, was that when you've got a conference, you might want to update the YouTube video URL partway through, in which case you want all your users that are currently watching that video to have it updated on the fly without having to refresh their page. That's where SignalR comes in, because it can do real-time updates without requiring page refreshes. So here's the web project. I've also got my worker project. So this is the one that does that basically sends the emails or updates the Solr search index, and that's basically all that I have. So for each task that I have a message handler to perform that given task, And that, I've also got, I did a separate article on the patterns I used for this worker role, which outlines things like dead lettering of poison messages. There are poison messages, something where, so suppose you sent an email to an address that didn't exist, and the mail server kept generating exceptions saying, no, this doesn't exist. You obviously wouldn't want to keep on redoing that again and again and again and again, otherwise it'll chew up all your memory and kill your worker role. So what I have, I'll just show you the code there. As your queues, when you take a message off, it's got this delivery count for a message. And you can check that each time, so that if, say, you try to send a message and it fails, and then it fails and fails two more times, so it's got a delivery count of three, you can actually put it on what's called a dead letter queue, which means it won't, Azure will automatically put that on a separate queue, so you can review it and then maybe take action, find out why it wasn't being processed properly, etc. And so, like I said, I've got a separate article on that, which covers some of the patterns I used for that. I've got some, I've got a cloud service here, and I use that just for my my worker role, because that's hosted within a cloud service. So the web project, is hosted in Azure websites. The worker role itself is hosted in a cloud service. I do have some comments in the article about websites versus worker roles and cloud services, and why I chose a website initially. And that was partly to do with the GitHub integration that you get with Azure websites out of the box, whereas with cloud services, you only get the TFS integration. And again, I love using TFS, and I do use it on pretty much every other project I've done. But for this, I really wanted that source code to be on GitHub, and so that was kind of one of the drivers for that. So if I just jump across into the Azure Management portal, so my UConf website... So I have a UConf website, and I'll show you, as you can see, you can, if you haven't used Azure before, I'd strongly suggest you sign up for the free trial and give it a go, and then you'll be able to try all this out. But as you can see, I've actually deployed it from GitHub, so it hasn't been deployed for a while because I haven't been doing too much on it since the competition. So that's the website part, so that's an Azure website. I've also got a database, UConfDB. And I can manage that from within the portal, or I can connect up to it from SQL Management Studio if I so wish. For my table storage, I've got, this is where all my error logs go. So I've got a UConf storage account. I've also got that cloud service, like I say, for the worker role. And then the search itself is actually hosted, comes up as a cloud service as well, but it's actually a virtual machine, which is running Apache Solr. Oh, and finally, Service Bus as well. So remember in this diagram I showed you Azure Service Bus queues? Well, that comes up under here. And you can see I've got the UConf Service Bus in there as well, which is the queuing mechanism for passing messages between the website and the worker role. Let's have a look at the actual UConf website, which is kind of the end result of all this, the whole project. So here we are on the home page. So feel free to jump on there and kind of see what it does. But basically, it lets you manage conferences and speakers and presentation details so that you can set them up in advance and then use Google Hangouts to record those conferences and then stream them live and with an embedded live video and Twitter feed on the site. If I just show you off a little bit from part five, so if I resize my browser window, you'll be able to see that adjusts using some of those responsive web design techniques, which the article mentions for part five. There we go. So as that gets bigger, that will all change, etc. So that was quite a big learning for me because I hadn't done much responsive web design before that. So if I just jump in, so I'm logged in, I've created an account, and I've also created a few test conferences. So here's, for example, say somebody wanted to find the conference, this is the All Conferences page. So I can view a conference, view more details. And then what you can do is, see, because I'm an admin for this conference, I can edit, I can remove speakers, etc. But basically a conference admin would come in here, create the conference, they'd add the speakers and the presentations, and then they would get a nice URL. So see that URL there, that's what you can actually use. So it's the UConf domain name with the conference short name directly after it, which I thought was quite nice. So they can take that URL and market it, send it around, advertise it, etc. And then when the actual conference date comes around, people who want to view it can come into the conference page again here. Then they can view the live stream. Now, Google Hangouts, if you are recording a live stream in Google Hangouts, it will show the live feed. But if it's already been recorded, it will also show the video. So you can come in here and you could play it or whatever you wanted. Here we go. That was just one. So I put in there, that was from the .NET Conf website, an example, just sort of showing how some of those .NET Conf features had come across into this. Now, Twitter, so I haven't actually got Twitter set up for this. So I'll see if I can find one that I had Twitter set up for. I'll just give you 2 seconds. Here we go. So I jump onto the live stream. And this was a presentation I did in a Wellington .NET user group, just showing sort of kind of what I'm doing now, but up to challenge 3, how I built the site, etc. But there's also an embedded Twitter feed. There are no tweets on there, but if I was to tweet on there, then that would come up. And so that was for if participants wanted to interact with the presenter or other participants at the time, they could do so and they'd come up in there. I did look at using SignalR for that, but then I sort of thought, again, time pressure, plus, you know, Twitter's very widely used, so it was very easy to embed. So that was my initial option, was to go with Twitter. And then I sort of, yeah, like I say, I did think about using SignalR, but then eventually I just didn't get time to do it. But that would be something in the future that, you know, if I was to really push the site, I'd probably look at doing, because then that allows you to store all those messages on the site and then do anything else I wanted with them, rather than kind of relying on the Twitter API where they control what tweets you see and so on. So yeah, the search part, which is interesting, so then this uses Apache Solr in the background. Now what I'm going to have to do on there, so if you try using this, I'm going to log off and I've got to go to HTTP. Because if you remember, I said that I tried securing the Apache Solr VM, but I didn't get it working, and I didn't get SSL working on it either. So I don't want to go in there registered or signed in with my cookie and whatnot being passed around. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sign out on HTTP again, and I might go, say, Azure search, and then that will actually connect up directly to the Apache Solr VM and pull results back, and it does things like highlighting and whatnot, summaries. And that was actually really easy to set up, well, comparatively easy compared to writing it from scratch. And that's probably, those are kind of the main features of the site. In the article, I talk about things like how I did, say, date time pickers, how I did tool tips, a lot of the responsive design stuff, and a whole lot more. So what I, you know, I tried to basically cover every aspect of it. And I also did a, just jump across to it, a daily, a history section. So I've got the main article, which is kind of summarizing the key discoveries. But then I've got, you know, day by day updates. And the goal with those was to show, you know, here's kind of, you know, because often you read these articles on the web and they just show the end result, but a lot of the how you got there sometimes is missing, which sometimes can be good. But, you know, I sometimes like to read ones where you say, right, well, actually, you know, you find out the challenges someone ran into and go through a bit of their thought processes. So that was my goal with providing this history section day by day as well. So if you do get a chance to read the article, a lot of the other sort of little discoveries I made while I was building the website are on there.
Well, this is really cool, and I think it can really help not just be useful at you know, at the competition, but actually be used in a real world scenario of helping people get content out at these conferences. So I'm really looking forward to seeing if this gets put into use by people. And I noticed that you have the code, all of the code is up on GitHub. And are you currently deploying this direct? I know you mentioned before you're pushing your website out from GitHub. So you've integrated your Azure deployment in GitHub. Are you looking for contributions back to this at this point, or what are your future plans with the project?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Initially, I thought I'd see how much it was used based on the article on Code Project, because obviously that got quite a lot of visibility. So I thought, well, I'll see if how many conferences get created. Now, unfortunately, I think there's one sample conference got created on there by one person, and it didn't have any actual speakers or anything at it. So I you know, that was a bit disappointing, I guess you could say. But at the same time, I mean, it's there, and so at the moment the site is there and it's going to stay there. So if you want to use it to create any of your conferences, feel free to go ahead and do so. The source code is all on GitHub, so if you wanted to go and fork that or make any updates or go and, you know, you could host your own if you really, really wanted to, version. But like I say, there's already a hosted version anyway. So,
No, that's perfect. I think it's hopefully once we can get some awareness out there, more people will start to use this, especially at code camps and other developer events. But at the very least, I think having the project out there where people can actually dissect it, read the logs that you've written about, you know, you going through the development process, but then I think having the source code out there is just really invaluable to be able to look at it more carefully and to, you know, integrate it into your own projects. So it's awesome that you have it out there.
Well, yeah, and I guess that, you know, part of it was all, you know, there was my own learning process, learning about Azure, learning about, because I hadn't used GitHub either for, you know, for any actual project that I was deploying. So I tried to incorporate a lot of those learnings into the code base itself, and also into the article. So you can see where, you know, you might find a section where it looked like I didn't really know what I was doing, but then later on I'll have kind of a breakthrough, and I'll say, well, here's how I overcame whatever challenge it was, and, you know, hopefully that helps you get up to speed a bit quicker. And yeah, like the code's all there for it, so you can, you know, feel free to take whatever you want out of it. You know, there are, like, if you just wanted to build, say, a worker role, that worker role that I have on there has kind of all the knowledge that I acquired about worker roles, and so you could take that and put that straight into your project. If you wanted to take the search part out, you could, and just use that independently on your site, or if you just wanted to take out, you know, the entity framework stuff, you know, there's all sorts of little sort of nuggets in there that I'm sure would be able to help anyone that's doing web development.
Yeah, great. Well, Phil, thank you so much for spending the time with me today and going through this. I learned a lot about what you did, and thank you for putting so much of this information out there. We really appreciate it. And again, thanks for joining. I know it's very early for you where you are, but really appreciate having you on, and hopefully we can get you back on sometime in the future.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Brian. And yeah, I it was really nice to be able to share it sort of in another medium, and hopefully, yeah, just get a bit more visibility for it, so that other people can either use the site or can use the source code as they see fit.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Phil, again, and for everybody here and Chris behind the scenes, thank you for watching this episode of Dev Radio, and we'll see you next time.